In Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1-2, let brotherly love continue. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Jeff and I spent a delightful day recently with the Reverend Peter Hewis and his wife. We go on holiday together to France and we meet up from time to time. So we had an outing last week to Winchester in about -5, I think, but we managed to cope with it. And Peter said to me, what was I doing? And I said, I was coming here. And he said, oh, what are you talking about? So I told him, he said, oh, I've got a story. You've got to begin your service with this. So this is Peter's story. The comedian Roy Hudd, in a recording, plays the part of a London bus driver facing a tribunal. One day, he had stopped his bus halfway along the route and refused to drive on. The chairman asked him why. Well, you see, sir, I was driving the number 38 on my usual route when suddenly I saw an angel sitting on the bonnet. The angel spoke to me and said, Roy, stop the bus and then come and talk to me. So I stopped the bus, told the 35 passengers that I'd seen an angel and was going to talk to it. This bus will be going no further. And did no one object to that? Asked the chairman. Only one passenger, sir. She said that she was a Unitarian. Didn't believe in that kind of angel. And anyway, she was taking some Brussels sprouts to her mother. So it was far more important to her that I should drive the bus than talk to an angel on the bonnet. Most of us would agree with that Unitarian lady, and I suspect that the script, which was written by Keith Waterhouse, the famous scriptwriter, came from the experience of one of them in the drama group at Mill Hill Chapel in Leeds. Some of them, they knew some formidable Unitarian ladies in that chapel. I doubt if any of us believe that angels sit on the bonnet of a Godalming bus, but I equally know that we believe in angels unaware. Bless you, Peter. I'll tell him you laughed. So, Christmas is nearly here once again, and I'm sure your households are frantic, just like mine is. Now, no matter what we believe or what our belief is, we should enjoy the message it gives us all. It should spread a touch of magic over our planet Earth. And one of the images which is symbolic of Christmas is that of angels. Very romantic, I know. Now, not angels on the bonnet of a bus, but angels in your Christmas cards, they're everywhere. Maybe you've got, well, you haven't got an angel. Anyway, I forgive you. Now, some may say that's a bit cheesy, but then I'm a romantic and I don't think that they're really all cheesy. We've just sung the hymn, "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear." And the words were written by the UU minister, Edmund Hamilton Sears. He lived from 1810 to 1876 and worked in the US, where he was born. Now, he was a very conservative minister, but was very well known to this day for his carol. So I wonder what he felt when he wrote the words, and what did he mean by the words, "to hear the angels sing," because it's repeated in every verse. Now, really, it's a privilege, the position I'm in, and I conduct a large number of funerals. Recently, I was approached by one of the congregation and thanked for the service. Then the lady told me she was glad that the deceased was now at rest, as he'd be looked after by the angels. Her friend alongside her said, "Yes, you're right. We all know that he's in the arms of the angels now, as no one on earth could possibly help him." And she looked at me and said, "You of all people know we're right." She then went on to tell me that the reason they had chosen Robbie Williams singing Angels was because of this knowledge that her friend was now in the arms of the angels. I stood there and smiled and said I was glad that they had enjoyed the service. And then good fortune looked down on me. And our conversation was interrupted by another congregant. Of course, I was left with this conversation going on round and round in my head. Did these ladies really think that their loved one was somewhere surrounded by beautiful creatures or mirages with long white robes and perfect wings being caressed and looked after? This belief certainly gave them comfort. How could I dive headlong into such a belief as they had done? Well, no, I couldn't do that. And I wondered what comfort and happiness had been bestowed on their friend during his life, or at the end of his life, when he was just told to lie there and wait for the angels. They maybe didn't need to worry about him or bother much about him, as he needed help. The angels would do that. Now, perhaps that's a bit cynical. On the other hand, these ladies were perhaps his angels. So, as so often happens when preparing a service, I came across an article in The Observer a couple of weeks ago about angels. There is a widow, an Irish lady, who has written several books about angels and has sold over 500,000 of them in UK alone, and several other hundreds of thousands in 50 different countries. Her name is Lorna Byrne. She's a lady about 60, and she says that she's seen angels most of her life. There was a survey for the Bible Society in 2010 in the UK, and it concluded that a third of the UK population have clear belief in angels. But 17% were unsure. Over 50% didn't believe, But 29% of adults, when asked, said, yes, I have a guardian angel. And 5% said they'd actually seen them. Now, for some reason or other, 17% of the people of Nottingham have seen them. I don't know how any of you come from Nottingham, but what's in the water in Nottingham? St. Anthony said in his solitude, he sometimes encountered devils who looked like angels. And other times he found angels who looked like devils. When asked how he could tell the difference, the saint said that you can only tell which is which by the way you feel after the creature has left your company. Many of us find it extremely difficult to get to know or to get close to people who come into our company. Of course, many of us are not gregarious and prefer our own company. But I'm certain that from time to time, we all need companionship of one sort or of another. At this time of year, we are reminded of the vast number of people who are lonely. Many live in communities where they don't know their neighbours. And they don't know the people across the road. And yet the people across the road may be yearning for friendship. They may be missing out on great and interesting relationships by not knowing each other. It's St. Francis said, it is in giving that we receive. We are all guilty of saying, oh, I must get in touch with John or Mary or Harry or Sally. I haven't talked to them for some time. And then we put it off and we don't do it. I myself feel this. I have a friend of many, many years who lives in Yorkshire. So we don't see much of one another. She's a very wealthy widow woman and very lonely. And why do I avoid calling her? Well, she talks for about an hour, maybe to an hour and a half, if you give her the chance. And it's all about what's happened to her, and maybe years ago what's happened to her. But I should be more patient. I should put aside this hour. Now, my life is busy, very busy. And I, like many of you, have a dozen things to do in a day. So I'm anxious to get off the phone. And I have a husband that goes, get off the phone. But I am so wrong. She needs someone to listen to her. And as I know her history so well and how complex her life has been, she has no children. I must call her. I am no angel, believe me, but I have so much more than her, and I am so aware of that. I have so many wonderful people in my life. She has so little. Another family I met only last week, I went to this home to talk about a funeral. When I went to the home, everybody was beautifully dressed and the house was, you know, all the latest designer, minimalistic sort of fashion. And the lady who had died had six siblings, all living locally. I when I was told by the funeral director that only one sister would talk to me about this funeral, and a brother-in-law, they were written down as the next of kin. So I went in and said the lady's name, and there was just one name, a Christian name, a surname, and an initial in the middle. And I said, it was S. I said, so what does the S stand for? Oh, I don't know, they said. I don't know her name. Oh, so what was her date of birth? Oh, I don't know. Now, this was the sister closest to her in age. I don't know. She was born in the summer, I think. I said, you must have a birth certificate. Oh, no, we haven't bothered looking for that. The deceased had a daughter who hadn't been in contact with this old lady for over 30 years. I said, what was she interested in? Well, I don't know. Did she like music? No, I don't think so, I don't know. Now, the lady who had died was widowed and lived two doors away. These are the ills of our society. We do not care enough for one another. When I asked about what music we would have for the service, the sister I visited said, well, I like A, B, and C. And the husband piped up, well, if you have that played, I'll leave the service. However, not all families are like that, as we all know. Now, with the risk of boring you, I'm going to tell you about another family. Larry was in his 80s when he died. He lived in a council flat in part of Portsmouth called Lee Park. I'm sure some of you have heard of it. I was invited to the flat, and when I went in, it was very dark. There was one tiny little table lamp with a very low light on it. You could hardly see really until your eyes adjusted. The furniture had all come from the tip. They told me that. But, you know, so what? There was chairs and a table and all the rest of it. He'd started off in life in the center of the city, and his family threw him out of home when he was about 10. No one bothered to look for him or take him back. He ended up at the fairground. There's a fairground on the seafront in Southsea. He ended up there and spent all day there hanging around the rides when he was 10 onwards and helping a bit if he could. Eventually, one of the owners of one of the rides took him under his wing because this lad was there so much. He fed him and made sure he had somewhere to sleep and got him a room in another chap's house in return for working for them both at the fair. He never went to school, and so Larry was illiterate. The time came when the man who looked after him sold his ride. And being worried about Larry, he approached the powers that be in the dockyard. And it was arranged that Larry would work there in the kitchens, making tea, washing up, delivering parcels, etc. He was there working in HM Dockyard till he was 65. And of course, he had to retire. The dockyard personnel department arranged with social services that he should have a flat in Lee Park. Now, this is about 5 miles out of town. So I was asked to go to the flat when Larry died. and to talk to his neighbours and friends about the service we were going to do. When I arrived, there were about 6 or 7 neighbours in the room. And along with them was a younger man who was in his late 30s, 40-ish maybe, whose name was Michael. It turned out that Michael had lived with Larry for over 20 years. He was terribly upset about Larry's death, and he didn't fully comprehend that Larry had died. I learned from the neighbours that Larry used to go to the shopping centre in Leigh Park every day. And he noticed this young man hanging about in shop doorways, a few times shivering with no jacket, no coat, and just staring at passers-by. Now, Michael was educationally challenged, really. He didn't comprehend what was going on all the time. On speaking to him, Larry spoke to Michael. He asked him if he'd had breakfast. Michael started to cry. And then Larry said, "Come home with me, lad." And he gave him a meal. And then he said to Michael, "Look, I'm going to run the bath. Go and have a bath, and I'll get you some clean clothes." So Michael had a bath. And of course, Michael stayed. He too had been thrown out of home. No one looked for Michael. Larry did try. He went to the local police station, but nobody had reported him missing. And Michael got so upset when Larry tried to find his relatives, so he let him stay. He had not had any schooling at all. And when he tried, apparently, to go to his own home, the door was always closed in his face. He was a lovely, simple man with bright red rosy cheeks, big brown eyes, and he wore a jumper, which is one of the things I will never forget, that didn't fit. His tummy stuck out underneath the jumper. The sleeves were to here. The service at the crematorium was to take place 10 days later. Every day, Michael went to the Chapel of Rest and sat beside Larry's coffin, open coffin, holding his hand, until the funeral director, when he was closing down at 5:30 at night, had to go and say, "Michael, you have to go home now." And he was always on the doorstep the next morning. The chapel was full at the crematorium. Everybody in the neighbourhood in Leigh Park knew Larry. And just as I began the service, Michael was sitting in the front pew. He left the pew and he came and he stood beside me and he held my hand throughout the entire service. Still wearing his tight jumper. The man at the fair all these years before had been Larry's angel. And without doubt, Larry became Michael's angel, guardian angel. Men of no learning, no stature, but full of love. You may all wonder, what has happened to Michael? Well, the neighbours en masse wrote and went to the council and said, "Please let him stay in the flat." And they all take care of him. They are now his family. The great theologian, Origen of Alexandria, who lived over 1500 years ago, wrote that angels were the servants of God's grace given to all humanity in order to save us all. Now, this, of course, is universalism, isn't it? The story of Christmas and the angels in it send us a message that shows us spirituality in everyone. It gives us the chance to be inspired to show love to our fellow men and to bring us all closer together. Every year, when we hear the Christmas story, we can enjoy the magic of it. We can hear the angels sing when we think of our blessings, love, and all the opportunities to spread the message of love. Don't you think that's what Edmund Sears was writing about when he wrote his carol? We are asked to accept the Christmas story as being rational, logical, and the absolute truth. And so many people do, but it's difficult for us Unitarians. Let us enjoy its mystery. Let its meaning show its magic. One of my favourite authors, still alive, wonderful, wonderful writing, Maya Angelou, the African-American writer. She says, "I've learned that people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel." May all of you this Christmas hear the angels sing. Thank you. Amen.